This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, I call this meeting to order at 4:35. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from November 15th?
I noticed that there was like one quick thing to change.
Yeah.
On the minutes. I forgot what page. But I wasn't talking about healthcare, I was talking about childcare.
It's probably page 2 under point B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, top page.
Oh,
so
childcare, yeah.
Discuss issues of child services.
I had a couple things.
Okay.
One is that Howie's last name is spelled wrong everywhere except under voting members present. It should be Howland, not Holland. Another thing was call for late additions. I think it was R. Wayne who asked to discuss the campus planning committee, not T. Goldstein. Mm-hmm. Well, on Ramsey's point, the last sentence of the thing under Part B, it says Arataya said they were on 3-year-olds. So I remember there was some. We had a discussion about this, like who were the survey respondents.
Yeah.
I think you said that they were children, but I'm. Even then, I'm doubtful about the ability of a 3-year-old to respond to a written survey. So I don't think that's what you said.
I don't think. Well, I'm not. I don't think that they were 3-year-olds per se. I mean, they did speak with. They talked a lot with the, I guess, the children, as well as they did, as well as doing surveys and questionnaires with the parents themselves. So.
Is there an alternate wording you prefer for that final sentence?
Because in the audio, I heard a 3-year-old, so I put that in.
It's what he said, but somebody did it for them. You know, and there's more than just 3-year-olds. There's 10-year-olds.
The question I really had was there an age range? And maybe clarifying something about the fact that it was people working with the children who...
Well, I guess we can make it more general in terms of the thing, because I still have not received, I guess, the document from Rose, so I can send another email. For the time being, would it be okay if we said...
You said you were going to look into it, so if you want to just remove that sentence,
that last sentence. Yeah, let's remove that sentence.
Arataya said he would look into it.
So he said that in
sentence before.
Well, if I suppose what I'm saying is if we cut that last sentence, then we should cut the sentence before it too. Otherwise it gives the appearance of you just not answering the question.
Second?
Sure. We can
cut the final two sentences?
Yeah.
I'll be very quick, sorry. The perhaps one more thing that's maybe substantive is approval of minutes from October 25th. The last sentence said E. Cortens offered to take the lead on this matter. I actually went back and listened to the audio. I offered to take the lead on sending my track change version of October 25th minutes to Shreya and Amy, not to emailing the president. And that I think is what this suggests. I propose E. Corten said he would send track changes to the Office of Assembly as a
yeah.
appropriate whatever. sorry to be such a nuisance. The third, the antepenultimate paragraph on page 3, beginning M. Lukashevitz further said, I think the amendment was to strike the clause on gender-neutral locker rooms. If you would like to move to a vote on the amendment striking the clause on gender-neutral locker rooms. This was Randy's amendment.
Howie's.
Was it Howie's? Oh, but Howie's in response to your comment. Anyway, the amendment didn't pass, but the amendment was to strike the clause.
Where are you, Randy?
This is the the third last paragraph on page 3.
Okay.
Third the page. Antepenultimate paragraph.
What are you changing
the this the second sentence should read, E. Corten said in the interest of time he would like to move to a vote on the amendment striking the clause on gender neutral locker rooms.
Okay.
And final thing, the campus planning committee, this is Brandy's discussion. I don't, do you have the, I guess you don't have the text in front of you.
No. It wasn't so clear enough.
It is not.
I don't think it
would I don't know, would you,
I'm happy with
I can't explain it any better than what's here, but maybe you can if that's necessary. But if you don't mind, then
I don't mind, because essentially it was an inconclusive discussion.
Everything from me.
And still it.
One thing. I may have apologized if I used air quotes, but I meant to say that there was a stick out on the campus and research committee part. I was thinking there was a stick out there. Was intentional. That many people I met all
what
accident.
Do you want to say?
I was saying that it clarified that TCAT was not an official TCAT bus driver strike, but was it in fact a stick out. Any drivers had not reported it.
Can I make just one small correction? My name is Lisa. Just
everywhere?
No, just the members present. CRIGIPP. So he's the lead. What page are you on? Just on the voting members'
end. Front page.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you. All right.
I move the approval of the minutes.
Okay.
All those in favor? All those opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Next on the agenda is a call for any late additions to the agenda. All right, seeing that there's nothing anyone would like to add, we'll move to committee updates. First, starting with Hogan Judicial Committee. Jim's going to speak on it because Phil could not attend.
Thank you, Melissa. So I think the members present understand that we're in the middle of still working Title IX issues. For the members of the University Assembly, do you all feel like you have a sense, I know some have a great deal of detail, a sense of what the issue is, Title IX? Is there somebody who needs me to recap some of that?
Did you do a good job on reporting?
I thought it was pretty accurate, yes. I mean, I didn't see any flaws in it. essentially, in the past two meetings, so two meetings ago we had a lot of the, we had the judicial administrator there. We had, what was
Alan
Mittman. Alan Mittman, yes, but from counsel's office.
Nelson Roth,
thank you. All these folks came, and the Women's Resource Center had some representatives there. And as you know, the issue is this Dear Colleagues letter that the Department of Education put out. It basically clarifies the standard of proof for sexual harassment, sexual assault being the preponderance of the evidence, and that the accused and accuser should be on equal footing. The campus code of conduct uses a clear and convincing standard, which is different than the Dear Colleague letter, and does not put accused and accuser on exactly equal footing, as would be required by the Dear Colleague letter. The university got together, Nelson Roth or somebody in his office is also part of this, and told us where our campus code is not compliant. This all happened last April, and the last meeting of the last university assembly, we put a Band-Aid in place saying for sexual assault, sexual harassment, we'll use the preponderance of the evidence standards and equal rights for both parties without any further explanation, essentially. That's now in the code. The expectation last year was that the codes and judicial would take it up and a more permanent, more cohesive solution would be found. So we had been working on that, and because of the evidentiary, or not evidentiary, the standard proof and the equal footing is a civil model process, and our code is based more on a prosecutorial model, it is not easy to fix the disconnect. Okay, is everybody who may not be well-versed following? In other words, do we rewrite the whole code? It's not an easy scratch here, insert there. What if the sexual assault also involves theft? What standard? You know, things get convoluted for the judicial administrator. And the university has a policy 6.4 that deals with sexual assault and sexual harassment for faculty, for staff, for everyone but students as the accused. So if a student accuses a faculty member, if a student accuses the staff, it would be done under this policy. If anybody accuses a student, it's under the judicial code. Two CJC meetings ago, it looked like there was great support for, at least as an interim solution, to move things under the lock, stock, and barrel, these two, sexual assault, sexual harassment, under the university policy. The policy would need a whole new section written to deal with students like who would be briefed, who would do the investigation, what would be the review process, but it would essentially, the intent would have been to parallel what's there, but build a section for students. So at the end of that meeting, we agreed essentially, and Ari helped to draft, and I sponsored an amendment to do that, which was addressed at the last meeting, which happened a week ago or...
Yeah, last Wednesday.
But we also asked to make sure that people who thought this wasn't a good idea come to the meeting and speak up. And they did. The net effect of the last CJC meeting was to move it into policy 6.4 was voted down convincingly, 6-3. Okay? There were various concerns. One is that it's not the right thing to do, and this letter from the Department of Education is a bit overreaching. I won't go into the details, but it's not an invalid, off-the-wall interpretation. There are others that don't want to weaken the campus code and the protections of the accused. They like the code. They like how it's structured. But that leaves us fundamentally at odds with how to really reconcile university councils saying that the code's not compliant, we need to do something, and leaving it the way it is not fully an option, or at least not one that is going to be left to us forever. In other words, we fully expect that if we don't put forward a constructive solution, the university is going to move forward on its own, and we'll be reacting or commenting on what they've decided to do. This vote, however, although they voted this down at the CJC, it was a constructive meeting. Everybody's been respectful. It's a contentious issue, but everybody's been respectful. And the people who see the opposite side of the view have agreed to sponsor a resolution at our next meeting for something that would be compliant, in their view, that isn't giving it to the university. Okay, so they've agreed to write that. And really the decision out of this meeting is we don't like the idea of putting it in the under the Cornell policy. You know, how is it different than a hate crime? Why should we leave the protections? There's some view, and this follows perhaps the Princeton model, as it was somewhat explained, that we could divorce grievance procedures from actual disciplinary procedures somewhat, so that the process runs one way, and if the investigation essentially indicates that, you know, guilt, that other protections of the disciplinary process, you know, that as currently built, could stand. But there's some fine legal arguments there that I don't have his formal opinion, Nelson Ross' formal opinion, but there's some basic disagreement on whether grievance can be divorced from, I mean, and this is beyond most of the committee. So we have a law school professor who's now drafting what they believe to be a compromise, a position. I think it'll probably take two meetings for us to vote on it. I'm not sure that it would pass yet. I mean, I'm speaking about future events. It might. But whether it passes or the resolution after that, I think we're on track resolving this next semester. There was some talk last week about having a resolution out of this body to the CJC essentially saying you have until March to give us either a agreed upon solution that your committee agrees on or your best options that you don't agree on, the best two-ish options that you don't agree on, and we're going to take it up so that we can meet our mandate to resolve this year. We haven't been able to finalize that resolution and yet, but it's something that I think we will probably bring up in the meeting. I don't know if it's our first meeting in the end of January.
24th? Yeah, I don't...
it's something that we're going to work on in between semesters. And so that's essentially where we stand. They voted down, moving it into the other process, the Cornell process. We're working on a alternate solution that the majority of the committee may support. It's moving forward constructively. It's a little slow, but I don't think we're off track to get it done this year. We don't know yet, though, how much longer the administration is going to wait for a solution, and we probably need to look about checking in with them to see, you know, what's realistic.
Yeah,
sure.
If you can briefly answer this, what gives the Department of Education jurisdiction over our code, whether it's civil or criminal?
Because we take federal education money.
If you like, I can just read the relevant clause.
Sure.
So this is what's called Title IX.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first section of it. This is 20 U.S.C. 1681A. No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any educational education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. And then it says except, and there's a whole list of exceptions, none of which, trust me, Cornell applies to. So we receive federal funds, we have to comply with that.
So this is a very wide interpretation.
Some believe it's a very wide, and it did apparently surprise many universities, this Dear Colleague letter.
If I may, I've got some thoughts about this that I think can help maybe clarify things. So what the Dear Colleague letter says is that, underline the relevant passage, as explained in OCR's 2001 guidance, when a student sexually harasses another student, the harassing conduct creates a hostile environment if the conduct is sufficiently serious that it interferes with or limits a student's ability to participate in or benefit from Title IX language, the school's program, the more severe the conduct, et cetera, et cetera. So sexual violence, sexual harassment contributes to a hostile environment, which is a violation of that student's Title IX rights. 34 CFR 106.8 specifies, this is the implementing regulation for Title IX, specifies the way in which Title IX is going to be enforced. And what it says is that a complaint that a recipient, meaning a university receiving federal funds, shall adopt and publish grievance procedures providing for prompt and equitable resolution of student and employee complaints alleging any action which would be prohibited by this part being Title IX. So it's, in other words, a demand that the university fix the hostile environment created by said violation, sexual harassment, sexual violence, under Title IX. What I think is complicating this is that when you read the OCR letter, when you read Title IX, and when you read the implementing regulation, it doesn't talk about guilt of the accused. What it talks about is the hostile environment. The question is whether or not the complainant, the person who is alleging a violation of their Title IX rights, is experiencing a hostile environment. And when you think about it that way, instead of thinking about whether or not this is about the guilt of an accused person, and instead about the hostility of the environment the complainant is enduring, then suddenly the problem goes away. It's about a preponderance of the evidence indicating the presence of a hostile environment,
right,
not about whether a preponderance of the evidence indicates the guilt of the accused. And those, I think, are two separate things. So what this comes down to is the question of remedies versus penalties. A remedy would be something like maybe a restraining order, maybe a class, maybe a relocation of housing, if this is an issue that's happening in a dorm. Whereas a penalty would be something like expulsion or suspension or a fine. And so what Kevin Claremont is effectively proposing is that you keep that you implement a Title IX compliant grievance procedure under Policy 6.4 that would use a lower standard of proof and allows the complainant of appeal rights to address this issue of hostile environment, which again, the question about appeal rights is, well, what about double jeopardy? It's got nothing to do with double jeopardy, right? Because it's not about guilt of the accused, it's about whether or not you're having to endure a hostile environment. So if the complainant is saying, I understand you've taken this action, but my environment is still hostile, they're saying the university needs to take care of that. So you can, Kevin Claremont would say, keep the grievance procedure, the hostile environment addressing, under something like 6.4, lower burden of proof, rights to appeal, while keeping the penalty portion, is the accused guilty, use a higher standard of proof for that, and should they be expelled or suspended or fined or referred to criminal court.
So he's building this argument. Nelson Roth and the JA are not convinced at this point, but we need to see the details. He's written, Professor Claremont's written an 8-page paper on it. We need to see the resolution, what it would do, get counsel's view on it. And the reason we're covering this in such detail now is because when it does come to us, March, April, February if we're lucky, but probably March, we're going to need to actually make some decisions, and it's still going to be people agree and disagree. And so we're setting the stage so that we can be prepared to deal with this constructively when it comes forward. So at this point, no action on your part other than to know it's complex. Roth and Kevin, you know, they're not agreeing on the interpretations, and of course somebody like I can't debate either of them on, you know, under the force of law. I mean, I can build an argument like that, but you know,
yeah.
So
well, that's a very good argument.
Yeah, and that's essentially where Kevin Claremont's headed.
And
we'll see if it can be supported.
The way I think about it is that this argument is win-win. You get the benefits of addressing the hostile environment created by a Title IX violation, and you get the benefits of due process and double jeopardy for the accused. And I think you can have it both ways.
I agree. And I think it's actually better than the current system.
I think so, too.
The fact that it came up and you can do something like that is actually an advantage. And it seems to me that it's such a loose reading of Title IX, a wide reading of Title IX, that there's no problem in taking time to get it right.
Yeah.
That the lawyers are lawyers, but their time frame may not be the time frame of getting things right.
Well, we certainly want to get it done this academic year. Right now, nobody's putting the screws to us, so to speak, to get it done this month or, you know, something like that. But I think we need to show that we're making constructive progress, or they're going to move. I mean, they feel Nelson Roth feels there's a liability. They're not going to leave that uncovered forever.
Would there be a benefit of contacting the president, asking if there's a deadline that this has to be done by before the university takes it into their own hands and makes the decision?
The president won't initiate that on his own. I'm sure he's aware of the issue, but he's not going in a staff meeting. What's the issue of Title IX? I think it's something that either counsel's office or the JA would ultimately bring to his attention and ask his help with. I think it's something, I mean, the assemblies are aware, Tommy Bruce is aware. Okay. I think we need to keep connected to Nelson, his agent, the Title IX administrator for the university, I mean, not a guy, the Title IX, and the JA. And I think as long as, I mean, the JA has been actively involved with this, Nelson has been reasonably involved, I think they'll let us know. In other words, I don't think we need anything per se. And if they were to move forward, it's more likely, because I know they've already done some work on this policy 6.4 idea, and that's kind of how they were thinking of would be a best solution. I'm on the policy advisory group. I would see that before it went through either way,
mm-hmm.
And could send out all the flares needed if it started to head that way. That process is not an overnight process either. So end of update, we're not going to solve today and we're over our time. So
yeah.
I just want to make sure we don't have a repeat of last April where a bunch of people came in here screaming and yelling at each other and said, the UA needs to do something, and we all freaked out and nobody knew what was going on. So
now you know what's going on.
Again in March, a bunch of people are going to come in and yell at us and it's not going to be clear. And it behooves us to, you know what we're in for.
You just did a very good job making it clear.
Thank you.
Really.
Okay, so
sorry.
Next we'll move on to the Campus Welfare Committee update.
Okay, I'll just make it quick. We're scheduled to have a meeting, I think, for this past Thursday. Unfortunately, on the day of, Linda and Lynette were both sick, and they were supposed to discuss the status of the bias response program, as well as what's going on with the UDC, and lastly, I guess, other diversity and inclusion efforts and prospective issues that they're seeing, that they're intending to see coming forth the next semester. We were rescheduling for this coming week, so this Thursday we're going to be having another meeting. I'm hoping to find out more then. I was also intending to bring up some kind of, I guess a formal approval of what they're doing with child care. And then lastly, I'm intending to encourage people to meet up with me as well as a couple others in terms of marketing ideas of how to get the word out on campus welfare as a UA. So I'm working with Lavanya right now. We're scheduled to meet next Tuesday.
Did you find out about whether the turnover has gone up or gone down?
It's gone down. But I
4.8 maybe instead of 48.
Sorry?
The number was maybe 4.8 instead of 48.
I think it is 4.8. But Rose is supposed to send the formal.
Good. Thank you for that. And then we're going to move on next to a new business. Can I get unanimous consent to move Resolution 4 up because Alex Flores is knows about it and would be able to answer questions if he needs to leave early? Okay. So, on that note, we'll move on to Resolution 4. Recommendation to cancel the university's affiliation and financial support with the Fair Labor Association. I don't know if you want to introduce a little bit.
Sure.
About it.
So this is something that the Cornell Organization for Labor Action and Cornell Students Against Sweatshops have been working on for a while. I'll briefly talk about the Fair Labor Association, and I don't want to have a lot of other questions. But the Fair Labor Association is an independent monitoring agency. So what it does is it inspects factories where collegiate apparel is made to see if they're complying with local labor laws and with universities' codes of conduct. It serves the identical function to the Workers' Rights Consortium, which does the same basic process, and the university is affiliated with both the Workers' Rights Consortium and the Fair Labor Association. The Fair Labor Association, though, has a few differences from the Workers' Rights Consortium that makes it less effective and ultimately, we think, actively harmful. So the Fair Labor Association, a third of its board of directors are corporations, are the very people it's trying to inspect. So it's a little bit of a fox guarding the hen house situation. And that's borne itself out in some of the cases that it's investigated. So if you look at the Russell Athletics case or the Nike case, the last 3 years, both of which I could talk more about if there are questions, in both of those cases, the Workers' Rights Consortium inspected a factory, found the violation, whereas the Fair Labor Association said there was no violation going on. Workers' rights to organize, to form a union in the Russell case, or workers' rights to severance pay, which is legally mandated in Honduras, in the Nike case, were not violated, which made it much harder for Cornell and any other university who was trying to hold these companies accountable to do so. Eventually, both Russell and Nike admitted that they were doing things that were wrong and remedied the situation, And even after they had done so, the FLA still claimed that they had done nothing wrong going forward. Or, like, looking back at it, that they hadn't done anything wrong. Additionally, our code of conduct at Cornell states that contractors are responsible for the behavior of their subcontractors, which means that apparel manufacturers such as Nike that don't actually make any gear, but instead just give orders to subcontractors, can still be held accountable and can't avoid liability that way. The FLA fundamentally disagrees with that, and when the executive director of the FLA came to Cornell to talk about some of his concerns, said, you know, we'll never hold subcontractors responsible. We don't think that's what's truly going forward. So from our eyes, they're at the best a waste of university money, and we're lending our name to an institution that is not actually improving workers' conditions, and at worst is actually harmful towards making any real improvements. This is something we've been working on for over a year. A very similar resolution was presented to the SA at the end of last year and was passed and sent to the president. We've been in talks with people from the FLA, sent them a number of letters, the university has sent them a number of letters about the university's concerns.
Including letters from President Scorton.
Including letters from President Scorton, where they outlined a bunch of specific proposals we'd like the FLA to take to get in line with our code and to be more effective. One of which was having more channels for student input so that we, you know, from universities they could actually hear what was going on. And that's been the only one they've even tried to address. And in the year since then, they've gone back and forth between maybe having a student stakeholder position, maybe formalizing student involvement, but not addressing any of the other concerns about how they do inspections or why so many of their inspections turn up saying there's nothing wrong.
So they haven't really formalized any, like, I guess, response?
They've sent letters in response that have, in my view, have simply kind of attacked our criticisms. In that they haven't said, and none of them have they said, this is valid, we'll do something about it. They said, this is why we do it this way, feel free to make your decision.
Can you, so President Scorton wrote a letter some time ago.
Right.
I think in response to concerns and resolutions that sent to him, he said, I'm not going to immediately, my paraphrase, sever ties with this organization. We need to send them a letter and hear their responses.
Correct.
Okay. I had physically seen the letter that was sent. I think maybe you sent a whole lot of details, because when I first got this, it was like, well, if true, yes, we should do something about it, but can we substantiate Russell, Nike, you know, we're saying that they were not, you know, can we substantiate that? I've seen the documentation, and yes, we can. Cornell has sent the letters. Cornell has received the responses. But I know that they did respond to that letter, and yes, they did explain, well, this is how we do it. Like, for one of the concerns was the people that they inspect sit on their board, and there doesn't seem to be any conflict of interest separation, you know, in that process that would keep somebody in the board from potentially influencing the outcome of the inspection of their factories or sub-recipients. Can you talk more about why you think in their response to President Scorton, they've done nothing to really address our concerns?
Sure. So yeah, I'll jump into a little bit more detail, and please stop me if I don't say something clearly. But there are a number of things they do that kind of aren't up to best practices in terms of what other monitors do. So they have corporations on their board. While we were investigating Nike and campaigning against Nike, Nike was the chair of the board of the FLA. And so we weren't surprised it was ineffective. Additionally, they have inspections of factories where they interview workers on site, which is bad because workers can feel like they're being surveyed. They don't know if management's listening in or not, and most monitoring agencies take workers off-site to do their inspections. Most monitoring agencies also have entirely unannounced audits, so that you don't give people the chance to clean up their act for a one-day inspection and then turn it back to normal, whereas the FLA uses a mix of both. The FLA subcontracts a lot of its own monitoring. So most do it in-house so that they can control it, like the Workers' Rights Consortium. The FLA then subcontracts its own inspections to some who are for-profit, to some who are funded only by corporations, so there's even less following that way. And then in the letter that was sent out, they just kind of said, this is what we do, this is how we've always done it, and did not at all make any headway on we will change this or we'll look at this or even reconsider this other than having more student input.
And I would say two comments. I mean, Nike may have been chair of the FLA. You can't expect it because I'm the chair, my factories aren't going to be inspected. So that there should be something that allows that person not to vote on those things, but you can't just say, okay, and they're the chair, you know, unless there really is no disconnect. The other thing is, as President Scorton made clear in his response, you know, when he said, I'm not going to sever, again, some time ago, was the FLA has, he feels, made significant contributions to workers' rights and other things. He was not at all discounting or disagreeing with the criticisms you made,
right,
or you, though, that were brought to him. But he also thinks the organization, or did think the organization, had merit. The resolution as currently crafted, it says several ties until they're compliant with our stuff. It doesn't have a remedy that says we're going to send them something that's, I mean, I assume we would send them a letter that says we're severed, if it was signed, you're going to sever ties until you,
right,
1, 2, 3 or something. And so what is it that we want them to do? What would make us reinstate them?
Sure. I mean, I can pull up the full letter, which you've seen, that lists all of it. But we have a list of 6 or so things that we want them to do, including corporations on their board having checks against them, having unannounced audits, doing their auditing in-house, the things I listed off before.
The best practices for the community.
Right, exactly. And then holding subcontractors responsible. So all of these complaints which they've seen for months, and I guess a lot of it.
Would you have any objection to incorporating to an amendment to the effect of the final resolve clause ending something like correct the following issues 1 through 6 and just listing it in the resolution?
I would have no problem with that if you just give me a minute to pull up the exact language.
I mean, I think that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
So is that a motion to...
We'll maybe save the motion until I have the...
Okay.
I don't think we need to support all of them $600 per year to solidify the need to buy it. What is that exactly? Like, what do they actually need to do for this?
So they are funded partially by corporations, partially by universities, by the stakeholders within, and that's how they pay their inspectors to do the inspectors and run their organization. So we pay to be affiliated, and that helps fund them.
And we just pay that $1,600 fee, or is it per company that they inspect?
No. It's a very small fee, so this isn't like a huge...
It's more a matter of...
Yeah, it's more us lending our name to them. It's I think, $600 a semester. It's minimal. In terms of a $3 billion budget, but it's more about our name and the fact that we affiliate with them.
The other question I would have is in the 6 whereas clause and the very final sentence of the resolution, it says our code of conduct. I'm just not sure what that's referring to. Is that referring to the collegiate licensing company?
Yes.
Code of conduct?
Yeah, so I guess that's an unclear reference, but yeah,
okay.
To explain that, the collegiate licensing company is a company that standardized contracts for universities, and so dozens of universities, of which Cornell is one, use this standardized contract from the CLC when having licensees, and in all of those contracts it says, for the purpose of this contract, licensee includes the licensee and all subcontractors.
Okay.
So in terms of saying we hold subcontractors responsible in our code of conduct, that's what it's referring to.
So I can offer an amendment there then, if that's all right, to change that whereas clause to read as expressed in the CLC's code of conduct.
Can we spell out CLC?
This could be a two-part thing. The previous one says we're a party to this code of conduct. We could say collegiate licensing company in brackets CLC's code of conduct, and then the next whereas clause would end with expressed in the CLC's code of conduct, the previous whereas clause, having already said that we subscribe to that code. Is there a second for the amendment?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
you know, CE's code of conduct, maybe capitalize the CE's the same way it is in the previous. Exactly. And then it also says in the final whereas clause, but this is assuming that that final whereas clause will be reordered. I think it's a great resolution. It's got my full support.
So I can read out. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. I'd say 4 major headers that have a lot underneath them. If I read out what they are and summarize them, do we think we'd be comfortable putting issues with these 4 categories and having this in appendix? Because it's like a long document with.
Could we do something like, you know, the four points
expressed
and
in,
like as expressed in this letter,
sure,
or something, and attach the letter as part of the resolution?
Well, let me before we get really into the nuts and bolts of getting is do we want to expend the time on this resolution and perhaps pass it tonight, or do we want to postpone this amendment to January with the refined language for a vote? Or, if, you know, do we have general support in the room to vote on it?
If I could just express a timing thing, and this is obviously up to you guys, but one of the reasons we wanted to bring it in now is because they're currently in talks with the FLA. Mike Powers, who works in Tommy Bruce's office and is head of licensing for Cornell, has been in communication with the FLA about these things going forward, and so that's why we're bringing it now. But either time, whether it's passed now or in January,
resolutions are of little effect if the timing is wrong. I would recommend we extend our conversations of this and see if we can resolve it.
Great. So, do we have the amendment for the second part?
We've got it up. I don't know that we can project it.
Quickly dictate something that Ari would take down and incorporate.
Or better yet.
Or maybe you can work with Ellie while we work a different.
You could table.
Why don't we table this? We'll move on to other business and you can email him and he can construct.
Exactly, yeah. I was going to say.
motion
to table the amendment.
Second. All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes? So we'll move on to back to A under new business, UA resolution number 2 on availability of accessible unisex restrooms and locker rooms on campus.
Can I? I'm not sure, David, would you like to move the
As I've had a couple minutes to review the resolution, there are going to be some small changes to it. So if Ari is occupied with the other one, you're not going to be able to report on these at the same time.
Well, this one has been tabled for now, so...
None of us have yours yet, so we don't need to vote on your changes because it hasn't been presented yet.
Well, we have it here.
Okay. The members don't.
You're talking about Resolution 3.
Correct.
I'm asking if David would like us to move Resolution 3 ahead of Resolution 2, before, so that you can leave earlier if you chose to. Does that matter to you?
Okay. It would be delightful.
Okay.
Resolution 3.
So we'll reorder and go to Resolution 3 on the parking and retiree parking.
Right, yeah, you see, you caught one of the same things. So apparently I didn't even read the title of it correctly when I said, yeah, it looks good. It would be retiree and accessible.
Okay.
Transportation commuter policy.
Sorry, just a sec here.
And the second whereas, prepared new policies regarding transportation commuter policy for retirees and persons with disabilities.
Okay.
So as you go down, you see fully retired, retired returning to work. Accessible. So the third underlined section says accessible parking program for disabled employees and retirees. That is correct. Retirees are covered under the policy for disabled employees. And if you go all the way to the end before the third whereas, and where it says retirees who are disabled, that really should be employees and retirees who are disabled.
I'm sorry.
So these are two separate, there are two separate policies that are encompassed within this document.
Just information. First, where is this motion coming from?
The Campus Infrastructure Committee.
The what?
Campus Infrastructure Committee.
The Campus Infrastructure Committee. That's our committee?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, I'm disturbed that we don't have a written...
I apologize for that.
And I would not like to vote on this today without being able to discuss it with the people who are directly concerned by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I apologize for that. I was poor chair in making sure that this was complete. David feels like he's going to have to move forward with this, most likely, unless we pass it today. So, if, you know...
I'm sorry, what does that mean? I thought this was coming from our committee.
Right, well, the policy changes, maybe we say more about it.
We're under a bit of a time constraint.
Who are we?
The Transportation Services.
Transportation, okay.
To implement particularly the policy for persons with disabilities. We've had people hanging on tender hooks on this issue for months now as this has gone through conversations. This is being brought forward not just by transportation but by human resources. It's gone to Human Resource Council. Student Disability Services and the disability folks and facilities have been involved in the conversation. Transportation is the face of it, but it's really human resource policy.
I understand the pressure for the disability, people with disabilities.
Yeah.
So why can't we separate that from the other part of the problem, namely the retirees?
Again, if you wish, but there is some link between the two in that the accessible parking lot also serves retirees. And the retiree changes pretty much beneficial to all retirees. So I mean, you can judge that for yourself, but it's the sooner we do it, the sooner retirees are benefiting.
Go back and explain that overlap, please. What parking lot are we talking about?
These are privileges.
Yeah.
So right now, we are creating a new set of privileges around accessible parking.
Right.
The privileges for retiree parking are would be lesser than
right.
those for disabilities.
But
retirees with disabilities would be covered by the policy for those people.
Okay, well, they've got disabilities. I still see that this could be separated. There are people with disability, and there are retirees. There may be some overlap, but
yeah.
they're under the fact that they've got disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to separate it so we have a chance to look at the retirees portion of it.
Okay, I think...
That's
completely legitimate. We did discuss doing that. Would that make things better for you, David? One hanging, would that be any better? This one's reservation.
There is not as much of an issue if there's a delay with the retiree policy. So segmentation of it would not adversely affect.
I think that's a good idea. The last time I asked to discuss this issue.
This does not impact Progressive Maritime. This is solely employee retirees. The policies for Professors Emeriti would remain identical to what they are now. There is, in fact, a written policy for Professors Emeriti, and there is really none for staff retiree. So
I'm sorry, but I really apologize because I somehow I didn't see that those were separate, but.
Well, I have no policy in your cupboard.
In that case, how is it okay if this goes?
Sure. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't
apply.
I really apologize.
But no. I clarification of main.
I know the context of this. Has the CIC taken a formal vote and approved this resolution?
What's that?
Has the CIC
approved this resolution? Approved passing a resolution that. Says that we agree with the policies, not the specific
The thing is, we agreed with the policy, but was not yet in resolution form. We read through the what the proposed climate changes were, and then designated.
Summarize them in the
resolution. Summarize it, and then that didn't come about, so we are now in discussion.
Elementary
procedure
point,
mm-hmm.
something like that. There is a motion for reading of papers, which is. Based on the right of all members of the assemblies to read any materials presented to them. So one option is to have this motion read out now. If you would like to vote on it today, it could be.
I prefer it to be read personally, because I don't like to vote on something that I'm not.
Yeah, I think we should put it up and read through it. If this is the last meeting this semester. I think we're going to run long, although we haven't yet, but I think we should adjudicate business if we are going to, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the fact of it. If this is would help you now and be less effective and create a problem in January, then I think we should deal with it now, and hopefully we agree with everybody that it should be passed as opposed to go, what? So,
Can I just move my seat over? I can't really see.
No.
Point of order.
No.
You asked unanimously.
They can't move the chair.
He assumes the chair.
So, in our ongoing effort to better follow Robert's Rules of Order, is there a motion to read the papers?
Second.
Motion to read the papers.
Second.
All those in favor? Opposed?
Abstention? Page one.
Passes?
Yeah.
I think yes, since he's the guy who didn't print it. But the punishment for the crime.
Sorry, just a second. I didn't know how to use Word.
You should get a Dell.
I think that's the way to go.
Okay.
Put it on
audio here. Yeah, can it read?
Siri, what is the resolution?
Who's going to?
Should I read it?
I can
be difficult to understand
it. I'll read it because it will be faster.
Okay.
Resolution 3. Resolution approving proposed changes to retirees and accessible transportation and commuter policies. Whereas the University Assembly, may examine matters which involve the interests or concern of the welfare of a substantial segment of the campus community and may make recommendations or resolutions thereon to the president, or to other appropriate officers or decision-making bodies of the university, including transportation and commuter policies. I'll pause at the end of any paragraph if anybody wants to tell me anything. Whereas, the Department of Transportation Services has prepared new policies regarding transportation and commuter policies for retirees and persons with disabilities in consultation with the Assembly's Campus Infrastructure Committee, the substance of which is as follows. Fully retired, same options available for all retirees, a free parking option retained, OA parking areas. An additional option of full-time OmniRide transit program added as an option instead of a free parking permit. One exception, 25-year retirees would be eligible for one book of 10 one-day Z permits per year.
So, in terms of the exception, they can choose between the other three options as well as getting that one, or is that they only get to choose for those who are 25 years old, they'll only be able to choose one of those three.
They would be in addition.
Okay.
And this is non-faculty retirees? That would I...
That is correct.
Okay.
Further down are... the differences between current policy and proposed policy are highlighted. So,
in the title, should we put non-faculty retirees? Is that useful?
Sure.
Yeah. Do we just, yeah.
Or employee retirees, whichever.
Oh, that sounds better. But
yes.
Positive.
Oh, it's just employee.
Right.
Yes, no. You were concentrating on something else. Faculty emeriti are not affected.
We were Googling for Robert's
rule. Okay.
So
in the title, employee retirees.
Up here.
Changes to employee.
And it also is employee. It would actually be faculty and staff accessible transportation. If we're going to start specifying.
So
okay.
Employee
presumably,
when
right.
it comes to retirees.
Do correct that, but it's faculty and staff. For accessible.
Can you put that next to accessible, Ari, and faculty and staff?
In the
accessible transportation.
But and students, too, right?
No, student policy not remains identical to what it is.
For the accessible permit?
That's correct.
Okay.
So back how about
the
here?
Back to the title.
No, back in the title.
I already did the title.
No, second change, too.
Title.
Employee retiree right. and faculty slash staff accessible.
Different group
of things
that
we need before that.
Okay.
The accessible.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, so, and I don't think we have to put employee retirees after that. Is this all the retirees after that refer to employee retirees? All right, retired and returning to work. Same options available to all current employees. Exception, one may retain no fee OA permit. Any other permit will be purchased at the full employee rate. Accessible parking programs for disabled employees and retirees. Municipal hang tag from New York State will be sole means by which you demonstrate eligibility to obtain a campus permit for accessible parking.
That means that permits from other states will not be considered? You got a California?
That's a good question. Yeah, that is a good question.
Okay. Since we're dealing with employees,
they're here. Probably not likely to have.
Probably not. We will respect municipal hang tags.
From other
states. So we could just say municipal.
Okay, so it's cut out from the
way. Basically, it's taking transportation out of the business of determining whether or not someone has a disability.
Okay. No fee parking option remains. OA parking here is. New AP permit available for a fee, equivalent to the perimeter rate, allows parking in any legal permit space, including accessible spaces. A review committee is formed to make assessments of cases of financial hardship, necessity of a reserved space, a no fee accessible permit based on a work location that is inaccessible using the free options available.
So there are three things that you might want an and in front of the last one, just for clarity.
Right.
And in the second bullet, I am revising, I've discussed with my staff and revised the no fee parking option would remain for perimeter parking areas, not just ONA, but it would allow parking in any perimeter area. Because what I realized was, we do that, there would be people shut out from certain areas of campus, which is not the intention of
OA. It's our perimeter parking area, so I think you can take OA.
It would just be all
perimeter
parking areas.
Yeah.
Thank you.
O is the B lot and A is the A lot, is that right?
That is correct. But it would also include other perimeter areas, WE West Campus, R on North Campus.
Gotcha.
And the
other
areas also, where we refer to
ONA.
Whereas transportation services have proposed, you're going to have to move the teleprompter here. Whereas transportation services has proposed this policy.
to supplant current practices, the substance of which are as follows. Under 25 years of service.
That's to the retirees.
This is now what the policy used to be.
Employee, retiree?
Currently.
Right.
Retiree, employee, is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
No longer working at Cornell University, fully retired. A lot parking permit, no fee, must demonstrate need. Transit service, retirees with CUID cards will receive TCAD Zone 1 privileges Monday through Friday. This is the same base privilege according to all regular Cornell employees. Returning to work at Cornell University, A lot parking permit, no fee. Appropriate permit for their work area at the current rate. Transit service, retirees with CUID cards will receive TCAD Zone 1 privileges Monday through Friday. This is the same base privilege according to all regular Cornell employees. TDM programs. TDM is Transportation Demand Management Programs. OmniRide, RideShare, VanPool. Okay. 25 years of service or more. One blue ribbon. No longer working at Cornell University. Fully retired. A lot parking permit. No fee. Must demonstrate need. Transit service. Retirees with CUID cards will receive TCAD Zone 1 privileges Monday through Friday. This is the same base privilege according to all regular Cornell employees. Daily visitor area parking permit. No fee. Available at parking and information booth. Presentation of Cornell identification card with a 25-year designation. Z permit available, must demonstrate need. Returning to work at Cornell University and working less than 20 hours per week. This might take till January. A parking lot permit, no fee. Appropriate permit for their work area based on space availability at no fee. TDMP programs, daily visitor parking permit, no fee. Available at parking and information booth upon presentation of Cornell identification card with 25 years designation. Returning to work at the university and working at least 20 hours per week. A lot parking permit, no fee. Appropriate permit for the work area based on space availability for a fee. TDMP programs. Employees and retirees who are disabled. Staff, faculty member completes the application for accessible transportation. Is that transportation should be capitalized? T, since the application for accessible is capitalized? And submits form to their health provider. Health provider returns forms to transportation office. Transportation office forwards application to Cornell health provider to review and make a recommendation to transportation. Transportation office offers individual the appropriate accommodation, a parking permit at the regular rate, a fee accessible permit, parking permit. If staff member disagrees with decision, may appeal to Workforce Policy and Labor Relations Policy 6.4.
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding this. So in order for them to, I guess you have to complete a form, submit it to the health provider, and then the health provider forwards it to the transportation office.
Mm-hmm. Transportation to Gannett, and Gannett back to us, and us back to the.
In other words, see why they want to get rid of it.
Oh, okay.
This is the debacle we got ourselves into, extricating ourselves, and making it simpler for our customers.
Because you added in the...
Whereas, the committee...
That was just to clarify which policies apply to... So here, employees...
I actually have a question on the accessible permits. What about short-term disabilities?
Short-term disabilities will be addressed exactly the same way they are.
So you don't need to have a municipal parking permit. You can get
that's
a temporary correct. Accessible permit for short-term disabilities.
Yes. That's the 6-8 week range.
Gotcha.
Whereas, the committee endorsed this proposed policy in order to eliminate inconsistencies in current practices with respect to transportation parking accommodations for retirees. Be it resolved?
Therefore, be it.
Therefore, be it resolved.
Mm-hmm. I thought resolved.
Persons with disabilities.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Oh, therefore be it over here?
Yes.
Should we say...
And on that same line that you were just on, for accommodation for retirees and or employee retirees and
employee retirees and
persons with disability.
Disability.
And this, if passed, this resolution is from us to the transportation services to do this, not to the president, where we should explain things like STD is not affected and Professor Emeritus are not affected. So yeah, obviously they know what it means since they've helped dictate.
Therefore, be it resolved, the assembly approves the substance of the proposed policy in its prompt implementation by transportation services. Respectfully submitted, Ben Lissau.
I think I like the substance of the resolution. The only thing I would say, and this doesn't need to be a deal breaker, it's not necessarily worth the copying and pasting, but it might, from a parliamentary perspective, might make more sense to have something like, whereas the current policy is all of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
therefore be it resolved that the new policy will be the other stuff, rather than incorporating the change policy into a whereas clause, but then the stuff that you read before, the stuff that...
It is confusing as read. That said, the people receiving it know exactly what it means, and I think we understand the content, so...
And we have... So we're 15
minutes. Instead of the file case next year, we have to change it. This will be the first release.
Yeah. Brandon, can you reread
it again?
I want to see if it sounds better.
All right, is there a motion to...
I call the previous question.
All right.
Second.
All in favor? Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes?
No.
So that's the question. That's the motion to call the question. So now voting on the resolution. Resolution 3, all those in favor of passing this resolution?
Need to count them.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 10-0-0.
Yay!
Yay!
Would you do it all five?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
I'm not included.
You can vote.
Oh, then it's 11-0-0. Sorry.
She decided to vote.
I didn't know that.
Robert's rule says things to say about that, but it's...
Yeah, because aren't I the
I'll tell you about it later. Motion to take resolution 4 from the table. Can we come back to that?
Yeah.
Is it ready?
Or no?
First of all, is it ready?
Where did
he
had the
email that you
outside.
Okay, sorry.
I withdraw my motion.
Okay. So we'll move on to back to resolution 2 in that case. Availability of accessible unisex restrooms and locker rooms on campus. This resolution was discussed at the last meeting.
I only have one question. Well, do we have to call the question before I can ask my question or no?
No, we're in debate on the resolution.
Yeah.
Then, Madam Chair, the second whereas says where transgender and gender non-conforming individuals. Is gender non-conforming individuals a term of art? It's not one I would choose, but to say you're a non-conforming individual. So I don't want to upset anybody by using an inartful term. If that's the term of art.
But I think that, you know, people say LGBTQ, that's like the Q, the none of the above.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're using the right term.
I think this comes from the resolution.
Okay.
Is this the right term? What does it mean?
Sorry.
You conformist?
Well, gender is a social construction as opposed to sex, which is a biological attribute. And I think people can define their gender in different ways and may not feel comfortable assigning themselves to either the male or the female genders.
Sexes.
No, they are they have a biological sex. The number of instances where somebody has indeterminate biological sex, so that exists, are very small. What we're talking about is gender, which is something that's different than sex. Anyway, I hope that clarifies.
I just wanted to make sure that nonconforming was the right, isn't an affront to people who would, that is supposed to address. And if that's the term of art, then I have no
objection. I believe that it is,
no,
because
objections.
It did come from the LGBTQ representative.
Okay.
On that side.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions of the resolution, or is there call questions?
The only thing that I would suggest is, well, I suppose this is a question more than an amendment. What's the next step? What I would suggest, perhaps, is that there be an additional resolve clause that includes maybe other people, but at the very least that the resolution be sent to Q Wang, the Vice President for Facility Services. I mean, otherwise, like, if we pass it and stick it
in the
resolution,
that's assumption.
Wonderful.
I think it's an assumption that any resolution that's passed would be sent to the appropriate administrators.
An assumption?
Yeah.
I hereby move that there be an additional resolve clause, would say, be it finally resolved that this resolution be sent to Q Jung Wang, Vice President for Facilities Services.
I second.
Makes your life easier if
yeah.
the resolution is where it needs to go to. Instead of you having to try and say, well, should be this person or that person.
So
this would say, be it finally resolved, which, as you know, is a terminology I don't like. But, yeah.
Do you need his personal name in there? If he leaves before it gets to him, we're in trouble.
I usually, when I'm writing resolutions, put the name in, but I put the title too.
I believe it's just Facility Services.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Jeez,
they added something else. Don't worry about them.
Okay. The amendment passed. Is there a call to question on this resolution?
Did we vote on the amendment? It was.
Oh no, there's a second. All those in favor of the amendment? Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
901.
Yes. 901.
I call a previous question.
Second.
All those in favor?
Only question.
Opposed? Abstention? Motion passes 9-1. So that was a call to question, so now we'll vote on the resolution 2 with the amendment that was just passed. All those in favor, please raise your placards. All those opposed? All those abstain? Motion passes 8-1. Or, yeah.
1-2?
Yes, to 2, sorry.
812.
Okay,
can
moving.
Take from the table. Are we ready for?
Why are you asking me?
Well,
oh, right.
Do you have a take?
Yeah.
There is a small issue which I don't know how we want to deal with it.
By the way, is there an H in Wang?
I was not sent
yes.
a.
Okay.
I was not sent a tasteable document. I was sent a scanned document.
Yeah. Well, is it the bigger question is it something that is easily transferable later?
What I saw on his screen was a 3 or 4 page document.
I will bring it up.
Wait, do you, Alex Morris just texted me, do you need
yes.
a copy and pasteable version?
I
can you send?
How about
the video camera? Oh, over there.
That's what he wants to put in, these 4 points.
Well, I don't think we need to, I think we can offer an amendment saying include those 4 points in the resolution without actually copying and pasting it right now.
I would agree there.
Yeah.
If they're in that readable format. What I saw was they were scattered throughout.
Okay. So I hereby offer an amendment rewriting the resolve clause of Resolution 4 to read, cancel its affiliation with and financial support of the FLA until the following conditions, terms are met. Colon 1, 2, 3, 4.
I would say, if I can offer a friendly amendment, the following four conditions are resolved because these are not prescriptive, they explain the issue.
Okay.
I will briefly bring back up Alex's letter to make sure.
And I need to read those four to make sure I understand what it is we're.
Ready.
May I read Alex's email?
Since it's the important point.
To clarify what he said to do with them. As for the wording, I would suggest using the first four. So, for example, suggest disaffiliating with the FLA. Sorry, you can't see it up there, but I'll bring it right back. Suggest disaffiliating with the FLA until it resolves issues with conflict of interest, lack of student representation, and lack of transparency and freedom of association. Expressed in President Sportman's May 20 letter to the FLA.
I don't see why there's any problem with just including the four, but that's just a summary of those four bullet points.
Would that just be the text?
Well,
yes.
I think it's...
Oh, you mean the text as you just read?
It would be my preference, unless there's any objection, that we incorporate the full text of the four bullet points.
I agree with that.
Let's not be ambiguous.
Point of clarification, he can't send you a version that you can copy and paste from because that's the way that letter was sent to him from the president.
That's easy. So are these actually images or like, what is it? Or is this a PDF?
There's no problem, guys.
No.
You can scan it.
Yeah.
We'll see how
or somebody can manually type it later.
But the PDF doesn't...
Can you put up the 4 big points so we can read them?
Yeah.
Is there more after this? This is just the first page.
Yeah. I would be happy to scroll if there's a... Do you need a motion for that, or can I just...
Definitely
need
your motion to scroll.
Okay.
Hold on, they're not that bad.
Hold on. The question is, Alex appears to be summarizing it in a slightly different format than what's here.
So what if we just use those exact points?
Well, I think the third one doesn't fit in terms of the wording.
I think that this is articulating issues, whereas he wants to turn those into solutions, which is not necessarily a mechanical conversion.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I withdraw my amendment and propose instead an amendment to include the language exactly as in Alex's email.
That does have the, although it's not as clean, it does have the benefit of directly relating back to President Gordon's initial letter to the FLA, where the in his letter, he explained, this is our concern.
Could
each of those paragraphs be aware as?
Those
are just the tip of the iceberg.
Are you
going
to be able to pull up?
They're a third of the iceberg.
And so that's what we agreed on including with Anna, was like the full document, right?
We talked about that.
Well, that's another option.
We haven't actually had any motion to include it.
If he can put the
paste it for now and then we'll remove the text.
Do we have to give? I mean,
for this new resolution that just cancels, that recommends canceling without...
It can.
They could always come back and say, we've changed this and we'd like you to reconsider.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. No, good. What I would do is from the until into the until, just cut out all the stuff. Until cut, it resolves
yes,
the issues.
Correct.
Let the philosophy from the until to the until.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Left. There you go.
Left. There.
Be it therefore resolved that Cornell University Assembly recommends the university immediately cancel its affiliation with and financial support of the FLA until it resolves its issues with conflicts of interest, lack of student representation, lack of transparency, and freedom of association as expressed in President Scorton's May 20 letter to the FLA.
Period.
One.
I like
that. Okay,
beautiful. So that's the text of my amendment.
Great editing.
So is there a second on his amendment? All those in favor? All those opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Now, is there a call to question or is there more discussion on this resolution?
Call to question.
Second? All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Now we're going to vote on this resolution with the amendment. All those in favor? Ten. All those opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 10-0. One.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's me. But since I'm on it, I don't think I vote.
Howie, we didn't know whether you wanted to actually push a resolution or whether we just want to invite these people to talk to us. So I crafted your resolution into a format, and depending on how long you think it takes, we can motion to extend the meeting. Or
we don't have to vote on it right now. I mean, we're in really short time. I just wanted to call this to your attention.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they should report, but I didn't want to. The whereas there may be reasons not apparent at the University Assembly for the absence of tardiness, I just wanted to come and talk to you about. But I think I would like the resolution. I'd like to make it a resolution. We don't need to vote on it now because I want to be.
I am prepared. I've looked into it today because as I was trying to glue this together, but I don't know what the other members think. I could not find anything. I couldn't even find, in independently searching, the version as new as yours. I looked at both of their websites.
Yeah.
I know in the CJC that the JA has said that her last report is way over. She hasn't done last year's,
right.
But I don't know where it's posted.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy with your addition, so we can consider this that you distributed as the amendment, as well as provide the assembly with an overview of the most recent data. That's okay. I don't want them to substitute that for report, but we ought to get some idea what's going on.
Yeah. What I would say is maybe there could be an additional resolve clause, something to the effect of that they publish, you know, their latest reports as soon as it's feasible, unless there are mitigating circumstances, so on and so forth.
Administrator has to be 7-9.
Well, yeah, I was going to make it a little softer than that. I'd like to get I'd like to
just a chat
to chat first, right? One of the reasons is that if you read the guidelines of the Office of the University Ombudsman, and it might be nice, Harry, if you could pull that off the web and distribute it to the gang, or at least give us the. Give the
bring it up right now?
No, actually, you don't have to bring that now, but there is, if you go to Ombudsman, there are the Cornell University guidelines for it. If you would just distribute that URL, that'd be good. But the description of the guidelines has a much more public presence and reporting aspect to it than what we've seen in the last 12 years.
Right. And the discussion is very timely with what CJC is dealing with Title IX writ large.
Well, I think we should talk about that with the Ombudsman before we
push right now.
It's 6 o'clock, so is there a motion to extend the meeting by a few minutes? Or?
Yes, extend.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor?
We need a motion. So this is on to extend the meeting?
Yes.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
Seconded. Favor.
All in favor? All those opposed? Yeah. Abstentions? Motion passes. And
okay. So,
I'd like to note one thing in support of the resolution, but just clarifying, I know Mary Beth Grant has said in the past that she is eager to get more feedback about her performance, and she basically said she would love to share her reports with the Assembly, so I don't think that I don't think that this will be ill-received in any way.
Let me say one more thing, because I got in trouble before with an issue. I put my hat in as a candidate for ombudsman, okay? So you should know that. And that's where I got involved in looking at this carefully. But just so you don't think I'm on a vendetta of some sort, I want you to know
that.
I think this is just very, very timely.
Yeah.
Very, very timely. And especially the two. Yeah, ombudsman and JS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They come together. Come together.
Good.
Question?
Actually, I got a quick question. So, have we tried to get in contact with, like, any of the people that we're inviting to come and speak?
About this issue?
Yes.
Well,
no.
No. I was wondering, like, why are we formalizing something when we can pursue, I guess, a more, a less...
This is just a way of recording the will of the society.
We have a
Ramsey is bothered because he's done this in the past.
Yeah.
You should just send him an email.
that was my question as well, but I think that...
People are supposed to report to us.
Yeah.
I think they're supposed
to report to us, so it's formalizing that we...
And if you look at the Cornell Police website, you can see their reports. Of course, they have law requirements versus university requirements to publish. But they have very detailed crime statistics, warnings, arrests, all these categories. There were no hate crimes. You know, these are the equivalent of what are the trends, what are we seeing, what are plaguing the student bodies. And when you're looking at, and the last one that we could find was 2007. They are supposed to do the same.
The website's on there too. You might have a look at that.
I did.
Yeah, right.
I did. That was a very comprehensive report.
Right. It was excellent.
And actually, that's a 97. I found a version from 2000 was the most recent I found. I've not seen anything since. And it's a meaningful report. I mean, and so this records that, A, they're way behind, not just a little behind, but also that we think it's important. Mm-hmm.
Call
a
question?
Yes. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Now we're voting on this resolution. All those in favor? All those opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
10-01.
Oh, sorry. It was...
Go ahead.
10-01. Wait, but I... Yeah, I don't understand. When do I vote?
Don't vote.
Okay.
I'll explain it to you after.
I told her she could, but you're right. It's.
That's what I thought. I tie.
Generally, you break ties.
Yeah. Okay.
And you.
Motion to adjourn.
All those in favor? All those opposed?
I'm sorry, we have another 4 minutes, Evan.
Abstentions.
I would like to amend Evan's previous resolution and subtract 4 minutes.
what Robert's rule says is that the chair is supposed to be neutral on issues.
Shouldn't normally.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.